let's get another perspective now on the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Alexander Vindman is a retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel and former director for European affairs at the National Security Council. Alex, welcome. You were born in Kyiv, so I know you're watching this with personal and professional interest. What's on your mind today as Russian troops enter the capital and now threaten to topple it within days?
My family left when I was 4 years old. I really don't have any relatives there, but I've had the fortune of living in that city as an army officer working out of the embassy. My mother is buried there. My grandmother is buried there. It's hard to watch because I understand the peaceful life has ended there, and they're at war, and there'll be heavy casualties.
And if the city does fall, and if Vladimir Putin installs a new government that's favorable to him, what does that mean for the world?
This war has not unfolded exactly the way Vladimir Putin wanted. If he was hoping to go in with a soft touch, limited military impact, that's not turning out to be the case. The Ukrainians have put up stiff resistance. So if Kyiv falls, this does not necessarily end. Of course, the Russians are going to install a puppet regime, but it's likely to be resisted. What's fascinating is if Putin thought he could do this with a maximalist military offensive, employing thousands of troops, but then quickly kind of extract himself from this, it's not looking that way. This is not likely to play out in the course of days or probably even weeks. It might be months or longer.
So are you saying that though the Russian military outnumbers the Ukrainians, they have far more experience, material, that sort of thing, that their will to fight might be stronger than the Russians at this point?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. I mean, there are some serious indications of that already. First of all, the morale of large swaths of the Russian armed forces is kind of notoriously low. Even before they jumped off across the border from Belarus, there were reports about carousing and drunkenness and soldiers not getting food or water. So even before, you know, Russian soldiers were getting killed, there was a mismatch in terms of morale. The Ukrainians are fighting for freedom and democracy, high-minded notions, but more importantly, they're fighting for their homes.
Russia said today that it would consider talks if Ukraine stops fighting. Based on what you just said, do you expect that to happen anytime soon? And would you trust the Russians in those negotiations?
I would absolutely not. I mean, this is a ploy kind of to divide the domestic population to a certain extent. Maybe even ensnare Zelensky in some sort of complication where he looks like he's capitulating, which the population right now is not prepared to tolerate. But I think until the Russians cease their military operations and maybe even pull back, there's no real way to take this seriously. There has to be clear indicators that Russia is serious. I mean, one of those indicators might be the fact that the Chinese step in to arbitrate. Then it's Chinese credibility on the line. That could be a clearer indicator that there's a seriousness. But right now, nothing that the Russians say could be taken at face value. I mean, Sergei Lavrov, the lead diplomat for Russia, lies like nobody's business.
Yeah, and speaking of the global response yesterday, I'm sure you saw President Biden announce stiffer economic sanctions against, among other things, Russian banks. Allies around the world, including Europe, are on board with that. Obviously, that hasn't done a thing to slow down the Russian advance in Ukraine. In the past 24 to 48 hours, have you seen enough of a response from Western allies?
No, definitely not. I think President Biden has pushed the envelope within the bounds of what any administration in the past 20 years was prepared to do. The problem is that we haven't broken free of this, really a long-term failed policy with regards to Russia. We've lost our kind of resolve to phase down a aggressive, belligerent Russia that echoes of the Soviet Union. And part of that is because we haven't had to deal with this. We're 30 years out from the Cold War, and we're in this frame of mind where we didn't have to continuously have this looming threat of nuclear war. And every time that Vladimir Putin raises the prospects, he's basically, you know, getting us to not do the things that we would have in almost every single other situation do. The reason we're not doing it here is one simple reason, is we fear this risk of a nuclear war.
Well, that's understandable, right? I mean, that's understandable.
It is, but this is where cool heads and clear minds must prevail.
If I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like you're saying this whole thing with the sanctions is too little, way too late, that in fact the United States should have and could have been dealing with Russia differently for many years. And if that's the case, what specifically has the United States done wrong in its policy with Russia that could have made this situation better?
In the 90s, there was a great deal of optimism about the post-Cold War order, the end of history, and that there was a lot that we could accomplish with Russia as a partner. Once Putin came to power, we slowly saw an erosion of those hopes, but we held on to them for too long. When Vladimir Putin went to try to reverse the will of the people in Ukraine in the Orange Revolution 2004, we looked the other way. In 2008, when he attacked Georgia, there were limited consequences. We went into a reset. He then proceeded to wage war in Ukraine in 2014 and then Syria in 2015. He was encouraged to interfere in U.S. elections in 2016 to potentially disastrous results. Chemical warfare employed to poison an adversary in Salisbury in the U.K. These things did not get a sufficiently, I guess, muscular response. We may have at that time thought we were doing something that was going to avoid an escalation, but we slowly but surely increased the probability of something like this war that's unfolding now increasing.
Well, and now the war is waging. The United States, Europe, has put these sanctions in place, but as you say, no one is willing to join the fight against Russia. Do you get the sense that the Ukrainians are essentially being left on their own?
Yes. I'm not itching for a fight against the Russians. What we can do here is we can support Ukraine with Lend-Lease. This is something that would resonate with the Russians. Lend-Lease is what allowed Russia to continue on its war when it was on its heels through much of World War II. We provided them with equipment to sustain themselves. We could do the same thing here with regards to Ukraine. We are not directly getting involved with boots on the ground, but we are allowing the Ukrainians to continue to put up a fierce resistance and setting conditions for a diplomatic solution. I think we need to play this game in a sophisticated way. Game is probably not the right word given the stakes here, but we need to conduct our foreign policy, support our national security in a fundamental way that protects and advances U.S. interests.
Alexander Vindman, let me leave you with this question, because some people will recognize your name. You were a key player in the first impeachment trial of former President Trump. You testified in 2019 about that phone call between Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky, Trump asking Ukraine to investigate the Bidens in exchange for security assistance. And that is why I want to play this tape for you, because on Tuesday, Trump called Putin savvy and genius in a radio interview with the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show. Let's listen.
So Putin is now saying it's independent, a large section of Ukraine. I said, how smart is that? And he's going to go in and be a peacekeeper. That's the strongest peace force. We could use that on our southern border.
Could you reflect on that comment from a former American president and what it means for this country?
What it means is Donald Trump, Tucker Carlson, Mike Pompeo, who are cheerleading for Vladimir Putin, have blood on their hands. Of course, it's Putin that is waging this war. But he's doing it under a certain set of conditions, a ripe set of conditions and opportunity. The need has been there for years. He's been waging war against Ukraine since 2014. What explains the why now of this question is the opportunity. And it's the opportunity that's presented by a former president that continues to sow discord, is inflaming hyperpartisanship, has enticed the Republican Party, wings of the Republican Party, to support his pro-Russia stance, which is absolutely shocking. America's greatest adversary at the moment is Russia and Vladimir Putin. So he's basically supporting and cheerleading for our greatest adversary. What I guess I could walk away from with this is that he'll own it, and the Republican Party will own it ultimately.
Alexander Vindman is a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel and former Director for European Affairs for the National Security Council. Thank you very much for your insights. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.